word is settled in heaven. Welcome back to Hackberry House, a podcast devoted to the Word of God and the persecuted church of North Korea. My name is Bob. This is podcast number 354. It's December 24, 2015. Well, I'm going to be paging through Usama Dakdak's Quran, beginning with the introductory materials and then going into the Quran itself, showing you some things that I think will be very helpful to the discussion we began yesterday. And I'm not going to go all through that again that we talked about yesterday, but there is a question that seems to surface as you listen to the media. Whether you listen to left-wing, right-wing, or try to listen to both, you're going to get confused as to who these Muslims really are, the ones in our country, the ones over there. Are they all radicals? Are they all peaceful? Is it proper to call a radical a true Muslim? Well, I think as I read through the Quran, you'll understand that a whole lot more. And I want to give credit where it's due here, and legally especially due, to the Usama Dakdak Publishing Company. I want you to, in fact, contact these people and get your own Quran, and you can read along with me. It is a Quran made by a Protestant Christian from Egypt who knows Arabic quite well, raised with it, translated the Quran from Arabic into English. And you can write to him at P.O. Box 244, Venice, V-E-N-I-C-E, Florida, 34284. The foreword to this book was written by a Mr. Lee. No first name is given except for the initial R, and that's all I can tell you. And he writes this: "There is perhaps no topic timelier in today's tumultuous geopolitical situation than the study of the modern rise and expansion of Islam. Since the violent assault on the West on September 11, 2001, many in our society have been unwillingly forced to consider and at least attempt to understand what is often referred to as Islamic fundamentalism or the jihadist movement. Simultaneously, the airwaves have been filled with well-funded and well-organized spin doctors from such groups as the Council on American Islamic Relations." You've probably heard the word CAIR. That's what that means, C-A-I-R, who make frequent appearances on talk shows and grant sound bites with the repeated mantra that Islam is the religion of peace. News stories often speak using terms such as moderate Muslims to attempt to separate the average Muslim from those who are labeled as the more extreme elements within the faith of Muhammad. The confusion concerning the true nature of the religion of Islam is amplified with every terrorist assault and the subsequent attempt to counterbalance with the take my word for it claim that Islam is the religion of peace. Where the modern seeker typically fails to ascertain the truth is the illogical attempt to define a religion by the actions and words of those who profess to follow it, instead of going to the source of the religion, in this case, the Quran. It's only as we read the actual revelations of the, quote, prophet Muhammad, that we can gain an accurate picture of what Islam truly believes and what its nature truly is. It is possible that a group can profess to practice a faith, but in reality, they're far removed from the actual teachings of their sacred text. The Lord Jesus made a similar charge against the Jewish religious leaders of his day when he said that they were not actually practicing Judaism as revealed in the Old Testament scriptures. But he said, "You teach the traditions and doctrines of men as the commandments of God." Hundreds of years of tradition have layered practices and beliefs among Muslims worldwide that are not found within their sacred text. and even run contradictory to it. The actual tenets and articles of faith and practice must be gained by studying the text, not the people, of a revelatory religion such as Islam. The explosive growth rate that Islam enjoyed in the early centuries due to the spread of the religion by the sword, in modern times has been replaced by expansive growth due to the plowshare of professed peace. Thus, this has been an increasingly difficult sell, especially in light of the historically aggressive policies of Islam, as well as the clearly unambiguous texts within the Quran which speak of intolerance, violence, subjugation of women, polygamy, and the ultimate goal of domination of all religions, eventually, by Islam. The embarrassing and straightforward nature of the original Arabic text of Islam's holy book created a formidable barrier for those seeking to spread Islam in Western vis-a-vis English nations. It is crucial that an accurate English translation, not interpretation, of the Quran is produced for the educated seekers of the true nature of Islam. The concept of replacing the original verses with different, even contradictory verses is a practice that must be understood when dealing with Islam. Muslim methods of interpretation rely on this practice to explain contradictory passages. Now, the rest of the foreword goes on to talk about this particular translation of the Quran, and it's good stuff if you're going to get this book. I don't know that you are or not, but I do suggest that you do go get it and read it for yourself. But I'm not here to sell this particular Quran. I want to sell an idea that this book truly brings out very well. I'm going now to the introduction by Mr. Dak Duck himself, and I'm telling you, these are very important principles that he begins to talk about. The need for a clear understanding of what the Quran actually teaches is more important at this time than ever before, now that Islam is being welcomed with open arms and in general ignorance by the West. In these last days, some interfaith activists are saying that there are three faiths descended from Abraham: Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, all sharing many of the same beliefs and the same God. Well, this could not be further from the truth, because there are not three, but really only one faith of Abraham. The Jewish prophets offered numerous prophecies of the coming Messiah, and the New Testament records the fulfillment of those prophecies in Jesus Christ. You'll see in the back of this book a table of some of these prophecies. That's another good reason to get the book. And throughout this book, the reader will discover how the Quran and Islam denies both the prophecies and their fulfillments. Moreover, it will be discovered that the Allah of the Quran is nothing like the Yahweh of Judaism and Christianity. As the reader will see by the end of the book, Islam cannot be considered another faith compatible with either Judaism or Christianity. It's clearly not the faith of Abraham. The reader will find that although it draws on some names and stories from Judaism and Christianity, the Quran not only denies, but is in direct conflict with these two earlier faiths, which actually represent the faith of Abraham. The Quran, this translation of the Quran, is the first objective translation by a native Arabic speaker attempting to be as literal as possible while still communicating the meaning of the verses, if any. Now, the few exceptions to this literal approach are minor. For example, translating a word for the sexual act as "have sex with" rather than a literal translation, which would require use of a very base four-letter word in English. This translation is also as faithful as is possible to the numerous grammatical errors occurring throughout the Arabic text. The reader will, therefore, find tense changes multiple times in the same sentence, gender confusion, and grammatically incorrect sentence construction. One explanation preferred for these errors stems from the fact that Muhammad delivered these verses in Arabic poetry. He may have violated grammatical rules and even created nonsense words to maintain flow and rhyming patterns. Since capitalization and punctuation does not exist in Arabic, the punctuation and capitalization in this English translation attempts to be reflective of the meaning conveyed in Arabic. Furthermore, due to the differences in grammatical structure, some words which are understood when reading the Arabic must be inserted to accurately convey the meaning in English. Many words in the Quran are either without any meaning or have conflicting interpretations by different scholars. Even though no objective evidence might be found, if a majority of Islamic scholars claimed a meaning for a word, it was accepted. Words which have no meaning or to which the meaning is disputed are used in their Arabic form throughout the text. Arabic uses a completely different alphabet than English. Therefore, Arabic words contained in this translation are written using the English alphabet with the commonly accepted spelling of Arabic words where possible, and with the author's own spelling of words where necessary. These words are footnoted on their first occurrence. Now again, I'm not selling this translation, but I wanted you to see some of these things that are truly difficulties in the Arabic, so that you realize that what they have, is the Muslims, cannot compare in any way to what the Christians have in their Bible. In fact, if we're going to translate the title of the Quran even literally, it's not the Holy Quran at all. Some people put Holy Quran on the Bible, on the Qurans in America, to make them think it was kind of like another Bible, Holy Bible. It's not. It's generous. The word is generous Quran. And I'm not sure why that is there, but that's literally what it says. For proof, they point to such verses as chapter 16, where Muhammad denies accusations that someone has helped him construct the verses he recites by pointing out that the person they suspect speaks a foreign language, yet the Quran is clear Arabic. During the research for this translation, it was therefore quite interesting to find that there are approximately 270 non-Arabic words used in the Quran. So how can they be clear Arabic if they're not even Arabic, right? The reader should not be alarmed if difficulty is encountered in gaining any meaning from significant portions of the Quran, because the reader is in good company. Dr. Gerd Recker-Puin, a German scholar, a specialist in Arabic calligraphy, and the world's foremost authority on Quranic paleography, that's the study and scholarly interpretation of ancient manuscripts, noted the same problem. And in a 1999 Atlantic Monthly article by Toby Lester entitled "What is the Quran?", Dr. Puin is quoted, and I quote here, "The fact is that a fifth, 20%, of the Quranic text is just incomprehensible. This is what has caused the traditional anxiety regarding translation. If the Quran is not comprehensible, if it can't even be understood in Arabic, then it's not translatable into any language. That's why Muslims are afraid. Since the Quran claims repeatedly to be clear, but is not, there's an obvious and serious contradiction." So you see why they don't want this book to be translated in other languages. And as I was reading through the English Quran, I realized, my goodness, this is wild, weird, I don't get it. And I felt pretty bad at first, but I realize now that everybody feels bad reading. And it's not because you don't have the Spirit of God in you, it's because it's not understandable. It wasn't meant to be. Perhaps it was meant to be poetic, as he says. Well, despite this caveat, an awareness of certain aspects of the Quran can help the reader gain a greater understanding of how significant conflicts and contradictions between verses are explained away. I'm going to stop right there because now he enters into a particular concept that I want to be sure that we get. I don't want to rush over because of time. But we'll finish that and the introduction tomorrow, Lord, or not, we'll finish it next time. Then we'll get into the Quran itself. Yesterday's portion of this series is on PDF right now, on sermon audio. It's also in a blog form, yesterday's. But from now on, including today's, from now on, I can't do that because this is totally copied material. I'm quoting someone else, so I'm not going to use that as a blog. If you really want to read what I'm reading here, I again suggest that you contact Mr. Duck Duck himself. That's again Usama Duck Duck, P.O. Box 244, Venice, Florida, 34284024. And you can tell him that Brother Bob from Chicago told you about it. I don't know if he remembers me or not, but quite an intense man. And there's no question as to where he stands on Islam and what they are doing throughout the world and on a whole lot of things like that. Very, very intense. The fire kind of burns around him. But get in touch with him, and he'll gladly sell you one of his Qurans. They're not very expensive at all. Well, tomorrow is the day. Tomorrow is the big day. So I guess I will not be coming around tomorrow. You are under no obligation to celebrate. I know that the Puritans never did, and many Christian groups, little groups throughout the world, many individual Christians just ignore it and move on as though it were an ordinary day. And it is, just another day. We have no idea when Jesus was born. But my hat is off also to those who do celebrate and who allow Jesus to be magnified and use it as an opportunity to tell others more about Jesus, because Jesus is in the news this time of year anyway. Less and less, by the way. I guess you've seen that. Whatever you happen to be doing tomorrow, I hope you'll have a good day. Saturday's our regular day off, so I'll be back with you Sunday to talk about North Korea, and then we'll pick up this series probably Monday, Tuesday, maybe a little bit more of next week. One of these days we're going to get back to Charles Spurgeon, too. I can't wait for that. But God bless you today, and don't forget what we started with, that even though the Quran is all mixed up, changeable. Psalm 119:89 says, "Forever, O Lord, your word is settled in heaven."